Welcome back to the A-List Lowdown, guys. Coming at you Tuesday, May 6th, already May 6th, 2025, with Thrupples and Not For Sale by Owner, which I watched the whole Carney Trump, like, first thing there where they're sitting in the Oval Office. So I got a pretty good idea what that's about.
It was,
it must have been 20 or 30 minutes, and they didn't even talk about Canada the whole time. And Carney didn't get to say a lot. He had to listen to a lot. And you can see a few times he wanted to interject, but he just didn't quite.
But he couldn't even do it, though. He's like just putting his hand in there, and he looked weak. Like, if you're going to interject, if you're going to make a move to interject, then do it, dude. You know?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He looked like a different person, in my opinion, there with the president. But yeah, that's where I came up with it. It's like Not For Sale. I mean, do you have a clip of that, or do I need to dig up a clip of that part?
I don't have a clip of that. I do have this clip. Speaking of dig up, I wanted to.
I'll find a clip for it.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen this. Wyatt Claypool shared this.
This is mind-blowingly disgusting. I just can't. I'm almost to the point where I'm just laughing about all of this politics stuff. It's just so off the rails that you can only laugh. Otherwise, you'd go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know why it's up at the top like that. I don't know what we've done here. What have we done? That should have still been from the... No, that's not it. Oh, did I change that one? I changed it for the debate. All right. God damn it. Let's try this again. I think the other people are using... some people I heard were using... What's it called? What's the other one we talk about using sometimes instead of StreamYard?
Riverside. ClearStream or the other one. Not ClearStream. It's very similar to that.
That's the audio only one, like that.
Yeah, ClearFeed. CleanFeed. CleanFeed, maybe? Yeah.
I listen to this. Tell me what you think. This is what the NDP's up to in BC.
On behalf of my constituents on Galliano Island, Susan Lambert, Daphne Arbor, and Adriana Briand, for the province to legalize human composting as an option for disposition of human remains in our province. The petitioner requests this House review the Cremation, Interment, and Funeral Services Act and amend Part 3 to include natural...
We don't need to explain petitions. Okay. Thank you,
Mr. on behalf of my...
Did you catch what he said there?
And you don't need to explain petitions?
No, before that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy that he's... Why did he name the people that are asking for it? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like... Isn't there a process to just throw some of those crazy ideas out? Like, why are the people in the Saanich Island... Like, why are those people in Galliano or whatever care about...
Somebody wants to use that shit. Somebody's either A, got a funeral home and they want a cheap way to dispose of people, a new option. Hey, man, you don't need a plot. We can just give it to the farmer up the road.
Well, they did that in California. There was some weird thing. So this isn't a new thing. In California, there was some changes in legislation about this same thing, about composting human remains. So it's come up before. It's a new thing. I don't know why they can't just cremate or bury them like normal. It's just disgusting, right? So now you're going to have your food growing in human remains? Like, come on.
Doesn't seem good. It's like, I always feel weird about feeding the chickens chicken.
Yeah, but what about this Rob Botterill guy? Why does he have to go into that, take that initiative that far? Like, I mean, I don't know. Just, we're living in a clown world, man. It's like, there's not bigger issues to deal with except for this stuff.
Should we go to the comments? How about we turn you into mulch when you die? maybe he can volunteer first. So anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. Let's jump over to this one from the local gay conservative, J.J. McCullough.
Okay, I'll close mine off. I had that too. So
I don't know if he is gay or not. I should watch. I might have libeled him. For some reason, I thought he was. I asked him to come on the show. He declined.
Then he's gay.
There you go. Check out this list of Canadian media outlets getting government money. I mean, what pisses me off most about this list is that the A-list is not on the list. I mean, you can't just throw us 10 grand.
I know most of them are 10, 20 grand down there, really.
Yeah, we use 10 grand. Recipients of CJCCCJ funding as of April 24, 2025, 60% of their estimated total calculated according to the total number of hours paid to employees for tasks dedicated to the production of online news in 2023. So Canadian Press Enterprise, 1.3 million. The Globe and Mail, 2 million. They don't talk about that. Metroland Media Group Limited, 2 million, basically. Post Media Network, 4 million. These are the conservative outlets, even. Black Press Group, 1.3 million. Ontario Limited, OA, Kawartha Now, 18 grand. Glacier Media Digital Limited Partnership, 397,000. Future of Good Media, 38 grand. You know, you could just see the A-list on there. 6 grand. Voice of Van Recorder, Inc., 20 grand. Ontario Limited, the Creemore Echo, 11 grand. Alberta Limited, Shooting the Breeze, 44 grand. Hey, that's a good name, Shooting the Breeze. It's windy as fuck right now. It's a lot of shooting. I shot a moose once in a real good breeze. Black Tartan Media, 10 grand. Addington Publications, 20 grand. Manitoba Limited, Balder Glenborough Gazette, 16 grand. Baby Media Mogul, 55 grand. The Lowdown to Hull and Back News, 34 grand.
The Lowdown.
The Gatineau Bulletin. Hey, I just got some maple syrup from our buddy Paul in Gatineau. West Quebec Post, 24 grand. And the Quebec Inc. News First Media Multimedia, 13 grand. So, I mean, I feel like we should get some of that. As an Indian man, I feel like I should be on that list. I did apply for a $300,000 book writing grant, so we'll see what they say.
That's good.
Well, they got a very good idea what they're going to say. But
the CJC CCJ is Canadian Journalism Collective, a federally incorporated nonprofit organization created for the purpose of distributing funds allocated under the Online News Act. So that's where it's coming from. Because I was going to ask you, well, where are the billions? Like, why is this, what was that top one on
there? It's not like the CBC and CTV money.
No, so the Canadian Press Enterprises and the Black Press Group. So those groups got the most, and actually Metroland. Oh, and the Globe and Mail, 2 million. So that's a lot, but.
Post Media got 4 million. CBC got 1.3 billion. I mean, there's a difference between the leftist media and the conservative media.
Oh, what? You don't think this is conservative, do you?
Post Media is pretty conservative. I would say in the Globe and Mail, I mean, they're the more conservative leading outlet. That's like, doesn't Brian Lilly work for Post Media?
Oh, maybe. Okay. And it was calculated 60% of the estimated total calculated according to the total number of hours paid to employees for tasks dedicated to the production of online news in 2023. Oh, you might have said that.
We're making online news. Speaking of online news, this is why Alberta might be upset a little bit about equalization. Did you see this? Quebec?
Oh, I didn't know. I thought your thruple was Musk, Carney, and Trump.
No. Multi-parent families like thruples to be granted legal rights in Quebec. I guess for French people do that all the time. A recent court ruling in Quebec has granted multi-parental families in the province the same legal rights as any other unit. A Quebec Superior Court judge ruled on Friday that limiting the legal affiliation of children to one or two parents is unconstitutional. Lawyer Marc-André Landry, who represented one of the families involved in the case, explains the ruling does not apply to step-parents or other modern families that are formed after a child is born. Rather, it applies to a situation where a family has multiple adults involved in a relationship before the child's conception. In other words, Landry notes, the parental project needs to be in place prior to the child's creation. It's not about step-parents or other potential realities. It's about three people sitting together and saying, we should have a child together, he explains. No one should be treated differently because of their family status. There were three families who were a part of the case, according to Landry. The first constitutes a thruple, three adults, a man and two women, in a relationship with four children among them. Let me guess, Muslims. The second involves a lesbian couple and a male donor who wish to be a part of the child's life as a father figure. I feel like that's not a throuple. That's just like a weird side deal you guys got to work out on your own. I mean, does the state really need to be involved in that? The third involves a woman with infertility who allowed her husband to have a child with a friend who asked to remain on as a mother. I mean, this sounds like a bunch of fucking jumping through hoops to explain that you pass legislation for Muslims, doesn't it?
No. There's been, I mean,
the picture is two dudes and a chick. But
well, it doesn't matter. There's been a polyamorous movement for a long time now. I mean, there's a whole
community of Muslims and their multiple wives.
Well, yeah, that's fine. People should be able to do what they want.
I don't want to be paying three chicks for fucking child benefits.
How do you know that's a reality?
Well, that's what do you think happens next, buddy? Those families do exist, no matter what people may think, said Landry. I feel like there's not enough of them to need laws. Like, they could just figure it out.
Exactly. Just figure it on your own. I mean, especially the guy that's just going to donate and he wants to be a part of the life of the two dykes. I mean, come on. Just figure it out.
Get out of here, buddy. I mean.
Yeah, he's going to get pushed out.
Oh, yeah. This ain't going to last. Landry calling the move a major change in our collective legal comprehension. You have kids whose affiliation from a legal standpoint does not match the reality. Landry creates Friday's ruling to the changing views of same-sex families during the 80s and 90s. It was a slippery slope. Look what happened then. I mean, we ended up with trannies in the schools. The law has evolved and homosexual families do exist, are accepted, and it's not actually an issue anymore in Canada. He said it's the same thing here. The law needs to evolve to match the reality of all Canadian citizens and those babies have not chosen to be born into multi-parental families. They must have the same protection and same rights as other babies. This sounds like all parental rights, so not baby rights. Landry points out that multi-parent families already have legal standing in other Canadian provinces, including Ontario and British Columbia. I'm not surprised. British Columbia is not a good example of anything. The Quebec government now has 12 months to amend the civil code to match the ruling.
Yeah, I guess it's the right for the kid to call all three parents, right? I guess there's some rights there for kids to have three parents instead of just two, right? Because right now you probably have to pick two and the third one's an informal parent or something, right? They didn't really tell you the difference between the legislation.
As long as I'm not paying extra taxes to Quebec. Because it sounds like they're going to need money. Because all of a sudden they have.
No, like, no, they're not going to need money.
Yeah, they have a few thousand more.
No, they've got money.
They have our money.
They just have to redo the books. No. They've got their own money too.
Graham the Commie Dunlop.
I'll show you that later. That's part of my segment.
You must have heard this already, but I figure it's good to play here.
Oh, I've got to play it. This is where I was going to name my part of the episode Cowboys Corral.
And this is just a snippet from it. I got it from Mark Nixon on X, but this is just from Danielle's speech the other day, which is pretty powerful. Again, pretty powerful rhetoric coming from Alberta.
No, one thing has changed. We have a new prime minister. And I will say that in my first conversation with him since the election, he had some promising things to say about changing the direction of his government's anti-resource policies. However, Albertans are more of a actions speak louder than words kind of people. So while I will, in good faith, work with Prime Minister Mark Carney on unwinding the mountain of destructive legislation and policies that have ravaged our provincial and national economies this past decade, until I see tangible proof of real change, Alberta will be taking steps to better protect ourselves from Ottawa. As a start, I will soon appoint a special negotiating team to represent our province in negotiations with the federal government on the following reforms requested by our province. We hope this will result in a binding agreement that Albertans can have confidence in. Call it an Alberta Accord, if you will. First, Alberta requires guaranteed corridor and port access to tidewater off the Pacific, Arctic, and Atlantic coasts for the international export of Alberta oil, gas, critical minerals and other resources in amounts supported by the free market rather than by the dictates and whims of Ottawa.
Can you pause it?
Every province in the country other than Alberta.
That's pretty strong. I mean, it's probably starting from a negotiating point of view where she's not going to get all three, but she might get two or something like that.
There was nine. This is just the top four.
No. Three coasts.
Coasts. Yeah.
Three ports. Yeah. Cause, and I like how she said, and it's not going to be based on government, you know, it's based on free market stuff and not based on what the government says the quantities are going to be and stuff like that. Right. So.
In Saskatchewan have coastal port access, and no province needs it more given the size and value of our resources. This will benefit all Canadians to the tune of trillions of dollars of economic activity, including billions for First Nations partners. Second, the federal government must end all federal interference in the development of provincial resources by repealing the No New Pipelines Law, C-69, the oil tanker ban, the net zero electricity regulations, the oil and gas emissions cap, the net zero vehicle mandate, and any federal law or regulation that purports to regulate industrial carbon emissions, plastics, or the commercial free speech of energy companies. These laws are destroying investment confidence and costing Canada and Alberta hundreds of billions in investments each year. They need to go. Third, the federal government must refrain from imposing export taxes or restrictions on the export of Alberta resources without the consent of the government of Alberta. Frankly, all provinces should be given that same respect for their resources. And fourth, the federal government must provide to Alberta the same per capita federal transfers and equalization as is received by the other three largest provinces, Quebec, Ontario, and British Columbia. We have no issue with Alberta continuing to subsidize smaller provinces with their needs, but there is no excuse for such large and powerful economies like Ontario, Quebec, BC, or Alberta to be subsidizing one another. That was never the intent of equalization, and it needs to end. If these points can be agreed to by the federal government, I am convinced it will not only make Alberta and Canada an infinitely stronger and more prosperous country, but will eliminate the doubts a growing number of Albertans feel about the future of Alberta in Canada. No?
There you have it.
Well, you know what I thought of there? Maybe Carney, Carney helped put a lot of those things in place. He was advising Trudeau for a while. He's been in the back scenes. It's almost like they put those in place so Carney could come in and take him away. Honestly. I like your, when are we going to talk about our theory about Carney moving to the right and all that? Actually, we'll wait in my segment. I've got somebody that says the exact same thing.
All right, I'll finish up here with a couple things. I figured I might as well read this here since it's going around. My letter, an open letter to the chief and councils of the First Nations of Alberta. Of course, you've already read it, but again, good to read here to get it on video for the people who haven't been able to see it. So this is a letter I wrote and posted on Twitter and Facebook and on my Substack, Indigenous Opinions, which is a CanadianShame.substack.com. It is to the respected chiefs and councils of the First Nations. For 157 years, we've endured life under the oppressive shadow of the Indian Act, legislation that dictates our identities and undermines our sovereignty, while systematically controlling our rights. Our history bears painful scars. Residential schools, the 60 scoops, and ongoing child welfare injustices, and generations of broken promises from Ottawa. Despite endless assurances from both Liberal and Conservative governments, we've seen nothing more than symbolic gestures and empty rhetoric. Today, Ottawa owns our lands, controls our resources, and even decides who qualifies as Indigenous. Our economy's autonomy and future remain hostage to a system deliberately designed to keep us dependent and compliant. How long do we intend to wait for this same federal government to grant us sovereignty? What exactly is the timeline? Where are the initiatives and what is our strategy? Continuing down this path, waiting for Ottawa to legislate our freedom is unacceptable. Meanwhile, we stand by and scoff at Alberta's growing call for sovereignty and autonomy. Rather than dismiss their efforts, we should recognize this as the opportunity we ourselves have needed for decades. Alberta has drawn a clear line in the sand, something we should have done a half century ago. We hold just as much right to self-determination as Alberta does. Imagine the possibility of renegotiating the treaties that have been disrespected and violated for 150 years. For Alberta bans, that opportunity could have just appeared on the horizon. to the ideas of genuine land ownership, control over resource rights, autonomy over child welfare, and a self-determined future really sound terrible? Alberta's quest for sovereignty provides precisely that, a chance for a reset, a genuine new beginning. Yet we remain quick to dismiss this moment, perhaps because we've grown tragically accustomed to government oppression. Why do we hesitate when confronted with our greatest opportunity in generations to redefine our relationship with Canada and or Alberta? It's time to seriously ask ourselves, is what we're currently living under the best we can hope for? Or can we envision something greater, something rooted in true self-determination and freedom? I invite and encourage all responses. Let's start a real debate. Let's talk honestly about dismantling the colonial dominion. It's our responsibility, not just to ourselves, but to future generations who deserve more than a legacy of broken promises. The time for change has never been clearer. Let's not miss this chance. So I didn't really get any constructive comments yet. But it did get shared around a fair bit on Twitter and stuff.
Did you get negative comments or?
No, not really. My own band won't post it. They keep blocking it. I think they're just going to kick me out. So I'm going to get kicked out by my own tribe.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird, eh?
Most censored Indian in Canada.
Well, let me just play this because we should probably just show this. I'm trying to find it now. So this is what it like after you heard Danielle's speech, right? It was very, very much like you can't say she's siding with the feds. You can't say she's siding with Alberta. She specifically said she's not. She's leaving it up to the people. And yet we have Mark Slepinski putting this stuff up here.
You know, this isn't a newish issue. Quebec tried to do this way back when. At the same time, you can't do it. There's treaty. All of Canada is treaty territory. It's inherent rights. First Nations were here first. We welcomed people from, you know, to our shores. We welcomed people with open arms. We want to build a beautiful country together. But at the same time, if people aren't happy in this beautiful country,
none of that happens. Jesus Christ. Hey, for one thing, this chick is not, nobody voted for this broad. Nobody, not the people.
That we're building together, then you're free to go and live wherever you want.
You're free to go and live wherever you want. Like, we're not, Alberta's not saying they're going to move anywhere. They're just changing, they want to change leadership.
But you can take the, the dirt that, you know, maybe your ancestors brought with them when they came over here from, you know, other places. That's the only piece of land that you're going to take, but you're not going to take any treaty land, any inherent land from any of our First Nations people across our beautiful country that we all share. So you're welcome here, but at the same time, if you're not happy here, you're free to go.
What do you think of that?
Nice speech, lady.
I mean, does she realize that? I mean, explain that the land is not, they don't have ownership of the land, right? I mean, I don't get how they think.
They have the treaties at best, but if Alberta separates, they would just take over the treaties.
Yeah.
Is how it would work. Unless,
yeah, but the, and the land, and then maybe they would have
because
proper ownership of the land.
Yeah, the law says that the First Nations would be at the negotiating table. So the idea would be that then it would negotiate actual land ownership, you know, instead of having bullshit acknowledgements over the whole province, you can take a chunk of it that's yours and you do what you want with it, you know, self-determine, fucking oil, whatever you want. You got to start talking about it at least. Otherwise, you're just going to keep getting more of the same.
Well, I mean, I'm in a, you know, oh, geez, I don't even know if I want to say this, but people better get ready for the separatists, especially for a massive backlash from the East. I mean, we're going to be called names like, you know, you're racist, you're ruining the country, you're destroying the country, you're tearing apart Canada. Like, it's going to come hard.
Well, yeah, that's only new for us, though. I mean,
but it's going to be new for all these other people. I mean, are you kidding me? What?
We've been getting called that for however long. But most of us are the ones who went against You know, it's the same freedom convoy movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. But this is going to, exactly. They learned from that and it's going to happen again. I mean, it might even get to the point where they start, you know, civil war type stuff, or, I mean, it could like, but I think Carney and Trump, what?
Maybe a couple fist fights.
Carney has the chance to stop all this because all he has to do is shift a little bit right, which I'll talk about in a bit. And he could just tamper this whole thing down. Like have
he's going way more than a little bit right too.
What?
I think he's going way more than a little bit right too. I think
he could, because we are so far left as a country that a little bit right still only brings us back to somewhat center, really.
He can go right of the conservatives and just take over the place.
But see, this is what's happening.
He can turn the conservatives into the PPC. That's all they'll have left to run on is the important stuff.
This is what's happening. It's going to get nasty. Look at this. You lost. Anything you have was given to you by your conquerors out of some sense of fairness, but you still lost. It is no longer your choice. That's what losing does, just like elections. I hate that the liberals won, but I have no choice in how they do things. Until the next election, of course. But you lost the war for this land. If you don't take it back by your vote or your declarations, you don't get to take it back. If Alberta votes to secede from the Confederacy, you can bitch all you want, but you can't change it. I won't say the real hateful stuff, but I think there are Indigenous people who support this movement too. It's all the high up, high paid people in our governments who don't want it. Here's when Canadian government going to address First Nations corruption, when Canadians going to start demanding accountability for the $200 billion given to them since 2015. You can call me racist all you want, but can't call me a liar. I bet Mark Carney does nothing except give. So there's the years where the billions are going, but the chiefs are corrupt and criminals. The people live in harsh, unsanitary conditions while they get to spend the billions. That's why they don't want Alberta to leave. They will lose their gravy train.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Did you catch this guy talking before Carney went in? Who's this guy? This is, I forget his name.
Oh, whoops, sorry.
Uh-oh.
It's my fault.
I forget his name, but he's talking about Canada and Carney.
Can we make a deal with Canada?
I think it's really complex. I think this is really complex because they have been basically feeding off us for decades upon decades upon decades, right? They have their socialist regime feeding off of America. I mean, the president calls that out all the time. Why do we make cars in Canada? Why do we do our films in Canada? Come on. So I think the president's going to have, I think it's going to be a fascinating meeting. I'm glad I'm going to be there listening, but it's going to be a fascinating meeting tomorrow. I just don't see how it works out so perfectly.
But you're not, can we make a deal with Canada?
Yeah, I mean, so he says that. And I guess now I should just play. I mean, I guess I should go, right? Before we run out of time here. Or?
Yeah, I got all I had is that the United Nations will be broke by the end of the year.
Okay, do you want to quickly do that then?
And the debt quiz. Which one do you want to do? We probably only have time for one. I'll save the United Nations for the plus show.
Okay.
And I'll do the debt quiz because this shouldn't take long and it's Canadian. So this is from the Canadian Taxpayers Association. And let's go through. Prime Minister Mark Carney plans to run up the federal debt even faster than Justin Trudeau had planned in the coming years. How much more is Carney planning to borrow than Trudeau? 32 million, 44 billion, 95 billion, or 1 trillion?
95 or 44?
Which one, 44?
95.
You're right. 95 billion. How high was the debt when former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was first elected Prime Minister? 888 million, 616 billion, 1 trillion, or 745 billion?
616 billion.
You're right. Trudeau doubled his debt during 10 years as prime minister. If you counted out loud, how long would it take for you to count to 1.28 trillion, the current federal debt? 365 days, 14 hours, 1154 years, or 40,636 years?
I'm going to say it's either 11.
It's it's
155 years, or it might be 40,000 years. Yeah. Let's go 40,000 years.
You're right. If you counted nonstop for an entire year with no break, you would only reach about 31.5 million. That's less than a 10,000th of a percent of the total debt. Which current provincial premier has racked up the most debt during their tenure? Francois Legault, Doug Ford, Scott Moore, Tim Houston.
Doug Ford.
You're right.
Oh, look at Ace in this thing. I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, but nailing it. Premier Doug Ford has increased Ontario's debt by almost $80 billion since becoming premier 7 years ago. If you laid out the federal debt in physical $100 bills, how many times would it wrap around the earth? 1, 7.4, 0.5, or 3?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. It's 3 or 7.4. I'm going to go 7.4.
Right, because it's a decimal. You're right.
Yeah. You
wrap the earth close to 8 times with the federal debt. It would take about 12.8 billion $100 bills to do it. Which provincial government has the highest government debt per person? Newfoundland, Alberta, Ontario, or British Columbia?
Provincial government has the highest government debt per person. Geez, I'm thinking Newfoundland and Labrador, but it's probably BC, Ontario.
I think
it's Ontario or BC, I think. Probably pretty tight. I don't want to get this wrong because I'm acing it so far.
Important.
Go with Ontario. Oh, it's going to be BC.
Oh, actually, the answer is Newfoundland and Labrador. Every single person in Newfoundland and Labrador owes more than $35,000 as their share of the provincial debt.
Oh, I thought that was my first instinct, but.
Which provincial government has the lowest government debt per person? Alberta, Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, or Quebec?
Alberta, I guess. Or Saskatchewan.
Which one are you picking? You gotta go hometown.
Saskatchewan.
Good try. The answer is actually New Brunswick. Every single person in New Brunswick owes about $15,635 for their share of provincial debt.
Wow.
Which prime minister piled the most debt onto Canadians during their tenure? Robert Borden, Brian Mulroney, Stephen Harper, or Justin Trudeau?
Trudeau, obviously.
Of course, you got this one. He doubled it. How many NHL teams could you buy with just what the federal government spends on debt interest payments, just on interest in 1 year? 15, 32, 29, or 10?
32.
Good try. The answer is actually 29.
I knew it.
Well, the government can't afford the entire NHL with the $53 billion it wastes on interest every year. It could get close. How much would the federal government need to cut spending to start paying down the debt this year? 75%, 6%, 9%, or 25%?
Cut spending to start paying down the debt. It's going to have to be 25%.
Taxpayers get the debt going back down by squeezing politicians to cut about 9% of the budget.
Way better
than that. 6 out of 10, correct.
That's it?
You got six in a row, and then you really fell off at the end.
Wow, I thought it was more than 6 out of 10.
You got 6 in a row and then missed 4 in a row.
All right.
Sorry, buddy. All right. It's all yours. Take it away.
All right. Well, I mean, let's just go into the Trump thing. I mean, I thought you were going to kind of have some clips from them, but I don't know what to do except for laugh. I mean, really, it's an amazing time to watch all this happen. Carney goes there to Trump, and it's like all the stuff he's talking about is basically right wing stuff. I mean, I'm going to play Jasmine Lane's thing here just because she's got the good clips here. But I mean, I've watched half of the thing on the White House thing, so I wanted to see the whole thing. But you know, they're just old buddies, man. They're just old buddies that are in this all together. It really feels like, I mean, Trump admitted that he basically helped Carney win. It's, you know, I don't know what the liberals are going to think about all this, how Carney's talking all tough. Then he goes in there and Trump's like, oh, no. The reporters ask him a question. Is there anything Carney can say that'll, you know, make you change your mind about tariffs? No, it's just the way it is. No, he wouldn't even, you know, Carney couldn't get an edge in, word in edgewise for a while. So here's the fun part, though.
Mark Carney included said, oh, Pierre Poilievre and the conservatives, they're just like Trump. Oh, they're going to kneel before Trump. Oh, they're going to kiss the ring. Mark Carney's not going to do that. He's a world-renowned economist. So says the first page of Google, at the very least. Well, turns out that that, too, was a lie.
Mark, would you like to say a few words?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I'm on the edge of my seat, actually. Thank you for your hospitality and above all, for your leadership. You're a transformational president, focus on the economy with a relentless focus on the American worker, securing your borders, ending the scourge of fentanyl and other opioids, and securing the world. And I've been elected with my colleagues here, with the help of my colleagues here. I'm going to spread the credit to transform Canada with a similar focus on the economy, securing our borders, again, on fentanyl, much greater focus on defense and security, securing the Arctic and developing the Arctic.
Well, it's funny. I never heard any of that from the Liberals, the whole campaign. Where's all the other stuff? They ignored all those things. Now, all of a sudden, they're doing all those things for us. I mean, is he lying or is he going to just move right of center and actually do the things that Pierre wanted to get done? That aren't that crazy, really. They're just common sense stuff to get the country back in order. I mean, Carney has the power to stop the separatist movement by just handing us, like, spoon feed us with some resources and some pipeline promises and all that stuff. And he'll just bring the country back together. I mean, he's just got to go right past center and he'll hold power.
And, you know, the history of Canada and the U.S. is we're stronger when we work together, and there's many opportunities to work together. And I look forward to, you know, addressing some of those issues that we have, but also finding those areas of mutual cooperation so we can
go.
Notice how every single one of those talking points was one of the conservatives' talking points that they were actually using during this election versus being Mark Carney and only saying things like Donald Trump wants to own us. Canada is not for sale. Look at how the Canada is not for sale conversation went down here with Donald Trump. And more importantly, how pathetically weak and embarrassing for our nation, like completely unrespectable, Mark Carney handled Trump's response.
Well, if I may, as you know, from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now. You know, Buckingham Palace that you visited as well.
That's true.
Having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale.
Who's the owners of Canada? Honestly.
Well, the voters, I'm assuming.
You really think he meant the voters? Come on.
Or the king.
Crown the king. I mean, as if he meant what, we own the country? Come on.
Well, I think that's what he was alluding
to.
No,
I don't think so. You think?
Yeah, really? That's how
he was talking about the people.
That's
why wouldn't he just say the people of Canada? I've talked to the people of Canada. And it's not for sale. Like the owners. Clever. What?
Because he thinks he's clever.
It sure doesn't sound clever.
You.
Especially when he just mentioned Buckingham Palace in the first breath. I mean, he just started mentioning Buckingham Palace, and now he mentions the owners.
I'm with you. But I don't think he would have just said it like that. You know what I mean? I'm with you that might be a play in the background, but I think he meant the voter.
Okay, I'll go with that.
As you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now. You know, Buckingham Palace that you visited as well.
That's true.
Having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale ever. But the opportunity is in the partnership and what we can build together.
And I was just thinking, I mean, if he would have said to him, like, you can't have it, Trump would just say, well, what are you going to do about it? I mean, really, we are just not prepared.
Have done that in the past. And part of that, as the president just said, is with respect to our own security. And my government is committed for a step change in our investment in Canadian security and our partnership. And I'll say this as well, that the president has revitalized international security, revitalized NATO, and us playing our full weight in NATO. And that will be part of it.
And they have, I must say, Canada is stepping up the military
participation because Mark knew, you know, they were low and now they're stepping it up. And that's a very important thing. But never say never. Never say never.
What on earth was that? That is literally like a very weak man who is so nervous, so uncomfortable, so screwed, really, trying to kind of, oh.
Yeah, he didn't. He was. He tried to reply to that never say never, but you couldn't hear him drowning out by all that stuff.
Are you kidding me? And for a man who talked a very big game over the last few weeks, I am so strong. Me, Mark Carney. Mark Carney will take on Donald Trump. Fee-fi-fo-fum. Look at him here. How silently, how,
he sits going,
listening to Donald Trump talk about the Canadian economy and essentially how he's going to obliterate it. And do you want to know why Canada doesn't have any footing here? Because the Liberal government that you Canadians who voted for them just reelected put us inside of this vulnerable position again. Canada would not be in this position if it were not for all of the horrendous bills that have been passed, all of the stupid things our money has been spent on.
See, the conflict is, and this is very friendly. We're not, this is not going to be like, we had another little blow up with somebody else. That was a much different. This is a very friendly conversation, but we want to make our own cars. We don't really want cars from Canada. And we put tariffs on cars from Canada. And at a certain point, it won't make economic sense for Canada to build those cars. And we don't want steel from Canada because we're making our own steel and we're having massive steel plants being built right now as we speak. We really don't want Canadian steel, and we don't want Canadian aluminum and various other things because we want to be able to do it ourselves. And
what is Canada doing, by the way?
All right, that's enough of that.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, it's interesting, eh?
Yeah, I think it was pretty funny. I think it's, I mean, I'm sure they'll try and make all sorts of excuses for how tough he looked, but he's just, I mean, he just sat there and looked at him while Buddy just fucking...
And even
on the auto industry.
Yeah. And even earlier on in that, he's like, look, they're basically been eating on off our plate for, you know, years and billions of dollars. And we don't need their stuff. It won't come to like, we won't let them, like, we'll defend them. But I don't know. Pretty interesting. We'll see what happens. I think like, okay, let me just do this first then. So this is table salt. And he says, I'm starting to strongly suspect Carney is going to bring in right of center legislation. I mean, this is what's so funny, right? This is exactly what we've been saying. And totally backstab the NDP voters who voted for him. But conservatives beware, he's going to use you like Trudeau used the NDP and then take credit for it to steal your base. I don't think he wants to deal with the NDP. I think he wants to deal with Pierre to pass tax cuts and crime reform and energy reform. At least for the first year. After that, they go back to fighting. Just a hunch. Carney is awfully nice to Pierre and doesn't seem to give two fucks about the Bloc or the NDP. Now, I don't know if Pierre will go for it, but yeah, the CPC should vote for a tax cut. But bitch, it wasn't enough, etc. I'll take what I can get. I'm desperate, sir, for some right-wing legislation. And then this is Yukon Strong. Honestly, it's kind of laughable how easily manipulated Canadians are these days. Oh, well, I encourage folks to follow this rabbit hole and find out exactly where it leads to. On the NDP table salt, on the NDP going right wing. I can't remember what I was going to say about that. And this is Julius Reichel here. This is what I was talking about with Quebec. So he's saying, oh, that's what I was going to say. Pierre threw it. I mean, when you look at his riding got redrawn, dude, and somebody's saying, oh, we redrew all the ridings. I mean, I thought I had it saved, but I can't find it here. But oh, we redrew all the ridings. Oh, you're telling me whether you do, did you do it all because you wanted to redo Pierre's riding Carleton, or because, you know, it was time to redo them all and you just happened to put a huge liberal fuck base in Carleton. I mean, they literally changed the demographic of the leading opponent's riding. And they added that huge ballot, that 91-person ballot or the 89-person ballot initiative. And they're doing it again. They're threatening to do that ballot thing again when he goes to run in Alberta. I mean, wouldn't you say something? Wouldn't you, like, why would you just silently just lose the election like that in your own riding? Like, it wasn't even a thing until after the election.
Yeah, and he probably should have seen it coming, too.
That's what I mean. And well, if he did see it coming, didn't say anything.
I predicted almost the same thing.
What do you mean?
Well, about there being conservative liberal backed legislation.
Yeah. Because they have to keep the country together. They have to fix the country, or unless they just want to destroy it. But if they want to fix it, that's kind of what they have to do. So this is from Julius. This is why I was talking about that, kind of teasing you about Quebec's revenue, right? Quebec's massive hydro revenues are exempt from equalization calculations. This was done under Paul Martin, I suspect, but I haven't dug deeper that this was done. I should have stopped there. This was done under Paul Martin. I suspect, but I haven't dug deeper that this was done to give Quebecers the illusion of being a have-not province to discourage them from demanding another referendum, while simultaneously serving as an incentive to Quebec's provincial government to take the money instead of pursuing another separatist referendum. So more smoke and mirrors imposed by the federal government and paid for by the West to maintain the subjugation of Canada's other separatist province. I wish Canada's two separatist regions would coordinate their separatist efforts either to force Canada to become a true decentralized republic or to both leave Confederation at the same time. And here it is. Yes, Quebec's Hydro-Quebec revenues are largely excluded from equalization calculations in Canada. While the equalization formula considers 50% of a province's natural resource revenues, Hydro-Quebec's revenues, being from a Crown Corp, are not assessed in the same way as Alberta's oil royalties. This exclusion contributes to Alberta's significant reliance on equalization payments. That's interesting, eh? So, like, you guys have privatized hydro, but I wonder if, like, BC Hydro, for example, is included in the equalization, or Sask Energy, for example.
I'm not sure.
And there's more here. There's more info on it, but I think we got to wrap up, right?
We do got to wrap up. Rogan said he offered Polivier to come on the podcast, and Pierre said no.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of big people that offered him on there, and they said no. I don't know if that was Pierre's campaign team or what.
But he makes being pro-American, and you know, it would have been a tough call. It would have been a tough call because it was more speaking to your base. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the cost of all the center being like, see, now he's on Rogan like Trump. Anyway, yeah, we do got to get out of here. Thanks for watching the show, supporting the show, alist.ca to support us. If you like us, like, subscribe, share, tell your friends, comment, and check out grandamerica.ca for everything else we're up to. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill. I'm gonna gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, your idea of fun, is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.